And we're live, I guess. Well, hello, everybody. My name is Bruce Robert Coffin, and I am honored to be a guest interviewer today. And I'm also honored to have with me Matt Coyle, award-winning PI novelist and author of the Rick Cahill series. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I got to say, I got poster envy of your framed glass poster. Makes mine look all faded.
All right. yours is awesome. Yours is awesome. For those of you not familiar with Matt Coyle, I want to run down a quick literary bio. Matt, much like myself, somehow spent 30 years outside of doing what it is he wanted to do, which was be a novelist, doing other things. Life gets in the way. But he was published for the first time in 2013. His debut novel, Yesterday's Echo, and this might have been you saving it up, Matt. I don't know how that works, but you won the Anthony for Best First, which is no small feat, San Diego Book Award for Best Mystery, and the Ben Franklin Award for Best New Voice in Fiction. Lofty awards there. Very nice. And he's also won The Shameless twice. Once is not enough. Twice is unbelievable. An Anthony, a Lefty, and multiple Barry, McCavity, and Derringer noms to go along with all of that. And recently, if I'm not mistaken, for your forthcoming novel, Last Redemption, you even earned a starred review from Publishers Weekly. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, that was cool. My first starred review.
And, that is very cool. I'm
pretty happy about it.
And well-deserved, I must say.
Thank you.
Being given the pleasure of having an early read of Last Redemption, it's well-deserved.
Is that what you call it when somebody asks you for a blurb, the pleasure?
Yeah. It was a pleasure, you know. We get a lot of requests, right? Yeah, no.
Much appreciated.
I noticed that you credit Raymond Chandler and Ross McDonald in the opening of this book for the reason that you started writing Rick Cahill in the first place. Right. Tell the viewers a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, my dad gave me The Simple Art of Murder by Raymond Chandler, you know, that the essays and a bunch of his short stories. You know, it was a long time ago. I can't really get the date correct. In my bio, I think it goes from 12 to 13 to 14 years old, but somewhere in there he gave it to me. And I started reading it, and, you know, I loved it. I loved the short stories, and then immediately I started reading Chandler. He only wrote seven novels, so that was pretty easy to go through his catalog. And then I started reading McDonald after that in college. College actually had a private detective novel class, which was pretty cool. And so I was reading the genre, PI genre, all my life from the start there. As I got older, I branched out a little bit, you know, to more wider mystery, crime, thriller. But PI has always been in my blood. You know, and that's thanks to Chandler and McDonald. And I thought they deserved a little hat tip and the acknowledgments or the dedication. I'm sure to them it meant nothing.
Right. No, I'm sure it would mean a lot to anybody to actually get nominated in there or to have be listed in your acknowledgments for sure. You answered a question I was going to ask you, which was why you chose PI to be a genre, you know, for your protagonist as opposed to say a police procedural or amateur sleuth?
Yeah. I don't want to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Because I don't think I answered that question fully. You said, you know, we both started writing after 30 years of doing other things. Well, you actually were doing something significant. You were a police officer. I was doing a lot of things insignificant, going from job to job. And I got a lot of law enforcement in my family, my extended family, but of course, I was never a cop. And I honestly, of course, as I mentioned, I started with Chandler and McDonald. So that hard-boiled voice, that first-person voice was in my head. But honestly, as much as I probably screw up PI stuff and cop stuff through PI, I didn't think I had the chops to get things correct and probably too lazy to do the necessary research to get everything right. So, I mean, there were times when I thought about, you know, as my series progressing, maybe doing something different, but I don't think I could do a police procedural. I would be afraid that I would get too much wrong. And then guys like you and David Putnam would give me a hard time.
Well, I can't speak for him, but I wouldn't. And if you ever did that, feel free to call. That'll work.
Don't ever speak for Putnam.
One of the things I noticed reading your books that I really enjoy is that you do humor quite well. It tends to come out in Rick Cahill's inner dialogue, especially. I find myself laughing out loud as I'm reading some of those thoughts. And I'm wondering, is that you? Or is that maybe another influence? Like, one of the things I'm reminded of is the irreverent streak in Robert Parker Spencer. And I'm wondering if any of that played into that, or that's just you.
I think, you know, I read some Parker, not an extensive amount. I think that everything is kind of through osmosis. Everything we collect as we read comes out. I'm sure there's huge Chandler, McDonald influences, but I it's not something I consciously think about. In terms of the humor, it's probably more me than anything else. Sardonic, sarcastic, dark, and just a fun guy to be around. I think that my books tend to get ironically, they started the first book, the first version of what became Yesterday's Echo. It was much too autobiographical, which happens a lot to in your first book, especially in first person. And it was much lighter. There was more humor in it. And I didn't like where it was going. Through a lot of revisions, I got it right. But the books they're not gory dark or anything like that, but they're internally dark and it's a troubled guy. So I do try to lighten it up every once in a while. But I would have to say that's probably me. I'll take credit for that one.
It comes across really well.
Thank you.
And actually, this is a plug for how good the new novel is. When I realized we were coming up on this date, I went back and grabbed Last Redemption again for another read. And really, all I planned on doing was skimming through it to look for things I wanted to talk about in the novel without giving anything away. And I found myself every time I turn around getting back into the book, like reading the book, as opposed to what I had planned on doing. So kudos to you for having that kind of a novel.
Thanks. High praise. Good to hear. Yeah.
One of the things that I noticed that you put into this, which I didn't know much about, I think I'm familiar with it as far as the NFL is concerned. It's discussed a great deal, is CTE. And for those of you who might not be familiar, the technical term is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is something that football players, boxers, people who are repeatedly subjected to head trauma can suffer. And I noticed that that sort of played front and center in this book. How did that come to be?
Yeah, well, I have the ARC with me, and I had it on the first page where it's mentioned. And I cannot say that without reading it. And even when I read it, I don't think I can get it right. I don't get encephalopathy right. So I think guys like, you know, you and I who are probably sports fans have heard about it. Yeah, I think that every football player that they've ever, at least recently, done autopsies on, and I guess there haven't been that many reasons to do autopsies, but I think every player, no matter what position, has had it. And I think that it's a lot more prevalent out there that for maybe people from other walks of life. Yeah, it's my understanding, and I've done some research, but not hugely extensively. Got some help from Doug Lyle, of course, as we all do. You know, it's repeated head injuries. And this guy, when I started writing Rick way back when, 20 years ago, the one thing I didn't know what I was doing, but the one thing I wanted to do is that I wanted to have everything that happened to him physically and emotionally matter. It accumulated, it reverberated throughout his life. And clearly that's happened through the emotionally for him, for anybody who's read the series. You see the baggage he carries. And I wanted to it made sense to me that that had to happen with him physically. Now, when I started writing the book, I probably didn't even know about CTE, you know, my first book 20 years ago, I wrote the first draft. But, and I didn't, once, even when it became known, it wasn't something I really thought about putting in the book. And then with all the traumatic, I mean, he's probably had, I don't know, as a PI, he's probably had six concussions, maybe five or six. He was a Golden Gloves boxer when he was a kid for, I think, 3 or 4 years. He played Pop Warner football, high school football, and a couple of years of college football. That's a lot of physical damage probably to his head. And I figured, I don't know if I really wanted to go this way, but I just thought it had to make sense. I want things to be as real as possible, you know, why you suspend your whatever. But I, so then I thought, well, this would make sense. How could he avoid not having this? And so, for this book, I decided that this is when things, we've seen a lot of the emotional baggage and the damage it's done. This is when the physical, damage over all these years. And like I said, not just as a PI, as a kid, football, boxing, all that. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of front. You know, Junior Seau, I'm in San Diego, much beloved linebacker, Hall of Fame linebacker. Right. He committed suicide and he shot himself in the chest. I think it was it Dave Durson for the Bears who did the same thing? Mm-hmm. I think he was the first one, a safety for the Bears. And I'm really sorry if I'm confusing Dave Durson with somebody else, but he was the first guy who shot himself in the chest because he wanted his head to he wanted his brain to be looked at. And this has really gone off on a very negative, dark, not surprisingly, a very dark turn, but that's good. But so I thought that it would, you know, I thought that it would be something that he'd have and have to deal with.
What I liked about that is it's an internal reoccurring nightmare that happens during the story. A lot of times it's easy for us to write something external that comes back. You know, it's the ticking clock, you know, yeah, the storm's coming, whatever it happens to be. But you've written into him an internal storm. And although I suspect most of the viewership and probably most of your readers won't have any firsthand knowledge with CTE, what I liked about it was I could project what he was, you did a really nice job describing it, but I could project what he was dealing with at any given moment with that. It's like walking into the room, which happens daily now, and having no idea why you've walked into the room. But you know, put steroids on that and then suddenly imagine how scary that would have to be, you know?
I
just thought that was a great way to have the readers identify with him. I got that right away. And then I kept worrying about when it was going to creep back up as I was reading the book.
Yeah. So, me too, where to put it. And you know how that goes, where to put it, and how many of them, you know, I tend to, when I'm writing something like that or anything, my first draft, I tend to overwrite things and just, with this book I'm writing now, something offshoot of that, you know, I stick in a lot of scenes that have a particular crisis, recurring crisis, physical crisis, and then try to yank out the ones that aren't as good as the others. And because you can certainly overdo it, but that's always a thought that goes in. Certainly on the last revisions, like, is there too much? Is there not enough?
Right. We all worry about that, I think.
Yeah.
Another thing I really enjoy about reading your books, I've read a lot of PI novels, and I sort of had respect for that all along. It's one of those things where I think if I was to go off on another tangent and write something other than what I write for the John Byron series, I might look
great
to a PI.
Series, by the way, thank John Byron's great series, much. Love it very much.
Thank
it's
you.
In plain sight. You were on the show. We talked about that.
Yeah, that's right. Seems like a million years ago already.
I know.
But one of the things that you do really well, which I think is a trap that you can fall into as a PI writer, is that you avoid the trope or cliche of having the police be, you know, just totally inept and bumbling along, which of course makes the PI's job much easier if the cops are clueless. But you do a real nice job of not doing that, and I wondered if that entered into your thought process with having Rick Cahill having been prior law enforcement, if that was part of your decision.
Well, it probably comes from my family's background and all that. My brother-in-law was a cop. One of my nephews a cop. Both my nieces married cops. So I got a lot of respect for the police officers. Absolutely. My brother-in-law, who just passed away this last year, became a police officer when I was probably 16 or something. So had that someone like him to look up to my whole life. There's probably some of that, but you know, I try to, you don't want to have them be inept, just the police be inept. And I'm sure that I err on the wrong side of that and have the police make too many mistakes or go down the wrong road, because you need, you know, why a PI hardly, it never solves a, murder case. There's times when they may help some things you might see on Dateline or something, but but they never solve them. And there has to be a reason for the PI to get involved. And so that's, I try to make it generally that the police have maybe gone tunnel vision in some ways, but certainly not inept. So I do have a lot of respect for law enforcement. It's in my family. But I also don't want to, I think the reader, just like you were mentioning, I don't think the reader, they don't want an inept police force. They want some tension for sure. And a reason for them not to want Rick to be investigating, but they don't want them to be the Keystone Cops by any means. So yeah, it is something I think about, but it's hard when you're writing a PI inserts himself or is thrust in through other reasons, not to have there's some reason that the police are doing something wrong or going off on the wrong direction for their investigation. But I mean, Rick is bumbling at times too. I mean, he follows his gut a lot and he makes mistakes, but he's very bulldogish. So eventually he kind of bumps into the right answer, but he clearly makes mistakes. I know that I don't know about you, Bruce, but I read a lot of my reviews, even on Goodreads, where it's right. you go in there because you're a masochist.
There's no other reason.
Pardon?
There's no other reason to go on there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people, some people don't, they want to have the PI to be, you know, to not make mistakes and be kind of a Superman. And my guy's not that. And sometimes he does dumb stuff. Sometimes he does dumb stuff probably because I'm writing dumb stuff and I don't know any better, but. Here's what I do when I read a 2-star review and they say he was dumb or something. I say, yeah, you know, I'm doing it right. That's what I tell myself. Clearly, if it was a 5-star review, I'd be much happier. I'd go, but you know what? I'm doing what I want to do. There has to be some people that just don't like
right,
it. So.
Right. Right. Well, and people have an opinion. That means they're reading it. So that's the most important thing. So. I got to ask you as a series author, and I don't, maybe you've experienced this, maybe you haven't. And if you haven't, I apologize for even bringing it up. But, as I am working on my 5th, you, I believe, just alluded to the fact that you're working on number 9.
Yeah.
Challenges in the series. I've noticed one of the things that, and I don't know if I've never heard anyone talk about it, but I'm assuming it must be a real thing. The corridor feels like it's narrowing. For me, as far as what I can tell a story about without feeling like I've told that story.
That is so well put.
Do you feel that already in yours? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially with the book I'm writing right now, how do you keep from not writing the same story over and over again? And I always try to find what I start with is, Rick's major subplot. What is going on in his life that he's struggling with, and can I find a through line, a case that he takes that would cross over into that or just make it difficult? They don't always cross over, but they, you know, what he's dealing with makes his job more difficult. But honestly, yeah, narrowing corridors is a great way to put it, and it really is frightening, actually, that you put it that way.
Right.
Right. Sorry, now it feels about like a straw. Yeah. So I think for me, it's really the internal thing. And even then it's nuances on problems that he's dealt with for a while. And it's, I'm sort of glad you brought that up, but maybe not, because it is something that is probably foremost in my mind. The book I'm writing right now I've probably never written an original story, so. I don't worry about that. I just worry about writing Rick stories and how he deals with maybe things that have come up for other people. But yeah, that's something foremost in my mind. Is this nuanced enough from his normal situation?
So I felt like it was. The last one, certainly. But everything I've read in the series had its own standalone feel to it, which I appreciate as a reader, obviously. But I am in awe of that. Like I say, as I feel that same thing in number 5. So good job. Keep that up. 30 years. Obviously you began writing before that 30-year period based on what you said on how long you've been doing it. You say 20 years now you've been writing novels.
Yeah. Long guy.
Do you feel like that time away from pursuing the dream directly hurt you or helped you in your writing at all?
I think it hurt the craft. You know, because I think that I'd be a better writer now if I wrote 10 years earlier. But I don't think story, it probably, I don't think it matters story-wise because, or character-wise. As I said earlier, you were a police officer for many years. So you had these high-pressure situations, these, hopefully not too many, but maybe not life and death for you, but life and death for other people. You had these really high-pressure situations. And, you know, I was in the restaurant business. I was in the golf business. You know, I had, you know, girlfriends and not having girlfriends and all that, and later in life, wives and not having a wife. But I think that I needed more life experience, and I wasn't really doing anything exciting. But just with getting older, you have losses in your life. You lose family members, mm-hmm. people you love. And yeah. I think that helps for the books that I want to write. I think that helps be able to put that real emotion into situations I've never been in that I can only imagine and do research on. But the emotion is true. Anybody our age has had loss and had highs and lows. And so you can put those real things that really happened to you and nuance the emotion and make it seem real, I hope. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, I mean, definitely be a better craftsman. But I don't think I was ready to really tell any stories. Maybe something funny at back, you know, when I was a drunk. I mean, I would pick up every year. I would say, well, this is the year I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to write, you know, and I scribble something that was awful. And, same time next year, right. Then I was working for a golf company when I was 40, early 40s. And I saw the handwriting on the wall. I'd helped three other golf companies go out of business in 10 years. And this one was going down too. So I said, this is it. When this thing goes out, I was 42 or three. I said, I have to write a book or I can't pretend like this is something I'm going to pursue in my life. I have to, much to my dad's happiness at the time would have been to get a career, follow something specifically instead of from job to job. And I did. When the place went out of business, I had some money saved up and I wrote first draft of Yesterday's Echo. Thought I was done. Thought that was it. Thought I would get an agent, never have a day job again. And then I worked for somebody for 16 years and then I quit my day job.
Wow. Did you ever see this becoming a series when you first started out to get that first novel done?
Yeah, I didn't somewhere along the line of that first or second draft. I didn't, when I first started writing, I didn't really think about it that much. I think, well, I just have to do this or I can't, you know, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. But yeah, once I learned the character more, Rick Cale, I realized there's a lot more stories to tell. And then as I went along and was around book five, I saw there was a really narrowing corridor and figure something out.
I'm on point then. Is there something, now that you're doing this and you've been doing it for quite a while, very successfully, is there anything about this business when you were projecting out wanting to be a writer that has, now that you're in this role, that surprised you about writing that you didn't imagine would be part of the deal?
Well, I thought I'd actually make some money, but maybe there's still hope for that. I thought, you know, I didn't know anything about, I knew you had to get an agent. That was basically it when I first started writing. So I didn't realize then when you're with a smaller, very good publisher, but a smaller publisher, or if you're with a big publisher and you're a mid-lister, that all the marketing you're going to have to do on your own. I mean, you're going to, it's kind of like Glengarry Glen Ross, ABM, Always Be Marketing, that I didn't really know about or think about. And in spite of the fact that I can seem outgoing, I am sort of shy in some situations. Although I do think that all the public speaking that you do throughout this maybe changes your personality a little bit. Much more comfortable speaking in public or in groups than I used to be. But that's something, it's not something I ever really wanted to do. So that, you know, you have to force yourself to do things for marketing that you never thought you would do. But I enjoy almost all of it. You know, I hate writing bios and synopses, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But everything else, I like the marketing aspect of it, but it can take up a lot of time and trying to find out the right thing. You know, Did you ever do the video loop? What do they call it? The, you know, movie, a little like a 1 minute movie.
Oh, thing, for the book?
Trailer.
No, trailer? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I did one on my first book, and every time I'd go on there to look at it, I'd see that it went from like 11 to 12 views, and it was always me that was looking at it. But I thought it was cool. I thought it was really neat, but I didn't, for me, I think it works if you're a big name, but for nobody knows how to find you. I don't think it, I don't really know how marketing works, but I do know some things that don't work for me.
Right, right. So you and I met, I think, for the first time. We might have been at other conferences together, but I don't believe we actually met at the much abbreviated and ill-fated 2020 Left Coast Crime. I've noticed, for me at least, and I know a lot of other writers I've talked to have struggled during this, 18-plus month lockdown, really, where you're not out seeing the readers. You're not getting to greet readers, and you're not getting to face-to-face have conversations with other writers. Have you noticed that that's made your writing more difficult in any way?
I think it's just made my life in general more difficult. The writing has been, for me, I am a bit of a loner, and the writing career, the conferences, the getting in front of people during book tours, and you get, as you know, because I see you all the time, you're doing things, speaking in front of people, even when your book's not, you don't have a book out recently, you're still asked to do things, and which is great. So all that was my social life, basically, and being in front of people, and then meeting, seeing old friends at every conference a couple a year, maybe three times a year. And I was actually fairly productive for the last year for that, writing Last Redemption. This year, not so much with the new book, but I don't think it affected my writing so much, but maybe it didn't. I don't see it, but it just affected my social, and I don't make social life, I make it light, but it affected joy in life. I think not seeing people that you really relate to. It's funny. I used to be I was in sales, and we used to have to go to conventions, trade shows, and I was on the phone every day selling anyway, but you're meeting with people, and I would always feel drained at the end of the day when I do one of those. But the first Mystery Writers Conference I went to and I met people, I felt full at the end of the day. I had energy. It was just, you're meeting people that are like-minded. We're all, doing the same thing, maybe somewhat differently, but we all have similar goals and similar dispositions in some ways, but I certainly miss it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So your next book out, Last Redemption, is slated for a November 30th release. Is that right?
Right.
And people watching this, either right now or when they tune in later on, where can people go to pre-order copies of that, which I highly recommend doing?
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for taking the time to blurb it. You can get it anywhere. Obviously on the Big A, you could pre-order it, but you can get it from your local bookstore, your independent bookstores for sure, Barnes & Noble. I'm having a launch. I mean, right now we're in person at Warwick's on November 30th in La Jolla. And then I'm doing another, hopefully in person, on the 4th December in Book Carnival in Orange, California. And I've got Poison Pen lined up for...
Awesome.
Up in the air. Can't remember the date. December 2nd or something. And I think that's going to be, right now we're about 60% is going to be live in person. But I know I'm doing Murder by the Book in Houston remotely. That one I'm sure of, that's going to be remote. And other things are coming up, of course.
Good, good. You've got a lot coming up.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, congratulations on the new book. And where can people go to find out more about you? Your website?
Right. MacOilBooks.com. You can follow me on, if you like, Yellow Labs. Angus has slept the whole time we've been talking here on the floor. I'm on Facebook, Matt Coyle, something like that. And Instagram, I can like the stuff you put up. I don't even know, mcoyle044. And I do know how to retweet mcoylem or something on Twitter. But I want to ask you before we go, I know you're working on a new book, and when is the next one coming out?
We are still talking about that. I'm hoping, if everything goes well, that it might happen by fall of 2022.
Cool.
It's tentatively titled Under the Gun.
Seems
like an accurate description of everything right now, doesn't it?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm definitely under the gun right now.
Right.
Well, I look forward to that.
It's been awesome, Matt.
Thanks. Thank you
very much. Great talking with you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you doing it.
Good luck with your launch.
Thanks.